Hi, welcome to Sacred Conversations with Vision Battlesword. This is an audio series created by me and by the Sacred Light spiritual community for our own benefit as well as for anyone else that might be interested to hear it. This represents a new kind of podcast or a new type of audio series that I call a community conversation. So I'll be talking with the Sacred Light spiritual community and we'll explore all types of topics from truth to philosophy, spirituality, consciousness, psychedelics, and many, many more. And the goal of this is just to explore reality, to explore truth, and to see what all of the different pieces and all the different perspectives are of reality that we can put together into an integration of an entirely new philosophy. So I hope you'll join me for this journey, and without further ado, here's our episode. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mason.
Not quite a doctor yet, but we'll get there one day.
You're my doctor.
A medicine doctor, a witch doctor.
Who are you, Robert Mason?
I'm just me. I know a lot of things that I'm not. I'm not an investment banker. I'm not an intelligence officer. I'm just a guy who is trying to make it in the world and help others do the same.
And I love you for that. And you are a good friend of mine. I'm really grateful to have this relationship with you and to have these amazing conversations with you that we've decided to start keeping track of, keeping a record of.
That thought is received and reciprocated, my friend. Thank you very much. Always a gracious host when I'm down here in Austin.
Thank you. Well, I'm Vision Battlesword, and I discovered the other day when I was recording a podcast with my good friend Courtney that I do not have an elegant, succinct elevator pitch, self-promotional script, let's just say. So I'll just introduce myself as your co-host, Vision. I'm considering what we're doing right now to be a sacred conversation. And let's just see where it goes.
Looking forward to it. We've been talking about doing this for a long time.
We have.
Nice to finally see things manifesting in 2024.
Here we are. Good way to start the new year.
Amen.
Do you want to talk about trust?
Let's do it.
Does that sound fun to you?
Yes, it does.
Earlier, before we sat down to get started with this, you said a phrase, truth and trust. I don't remember exactly the context of what that popped out of, but I thought that was interesting to bring those two words together as at least a part of a unified concept. So I don't know if that's a direction we're eventually going to go in, but I'm very curious just to explore the idea of trust.
Okay.
With you. And especially, you know, starting from where we started from, which was a situation or a scenario which I think everyone has experienced, and I know that you and I both have experienced very recently, which is a question of how to repair trust or how to rebuild trust. But that, for me, that leads to an even perhaps more preliminary question, which is, well, what is trust? How do we define that?
That's a good question. I don't have a textbook definition of it. I would say trust and faith are closely related. Trust is maybe the ability to have faith. And I'm going to bring truth back into it. Faith in the truth that is coming at you from an outside source.
Say that again. Faith is...
Trust is the ability to have faith in the truth coming to you from an external source. I think that's where I arrived.
Trust is the ability to have faith in the truth that's coming to you from an outside source. Interesting. So that has something to do with belief. Is that right?
Yes, it absolutely does.
And faith is what? Faith is believing something implicitly?
I like that.
Okay. So trust, in the sense that you just described it, related to faith and truth, trust has to do with your ability to believe someone, ultimately.
Yes.
That's really where the faith is, the linkage between trust and truth.
Yeah.
Because you believe them.
Correct.
In some way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see.
I like that definition.
Interesting. So what's truth?
Truth is, oh boy, so I've been reading a lot of The Fifth Agreement lately, mm-hmm. which talks a ton about truth.
The Masterpiece by Don Miguel Ruiz.
Truth is anything that is absolute for all people, regardless of their personal belief system.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's very objective. Truth
is objective.
Truth is objective in that frame.
I think that's actually a line in the book. Truth is objective. Yes.
Well, that's very interesting. If we insert that definition of truth or something similar to it into the definition of trust as you laid it out, that makes things very interesting to me, because if truth is that which is accurate, let's say, regardless of any particular frame of reference, regardless of any particular perspective or subjective interpretation, then that puts a really heavy burden on any relationship based on trust, doesn't it?
It can. I believe that would have to do largely with one's personal definition around the symbols that we all accept, whether they're words or iconography, as they manifest in our own personal narratives. And to build trust in a relationship, there's a certain amount of agreement in definition that has to be there, because anything other than truth, which is objective, is a narrative, a story, a dream that we build in our own minds and is subjective based on our own personal belief systems and experiences.
Right. Well, that piece that you just said at the end there about our own personal belief systems and experiences reminds me of, well, let me rephrase that. There's a lot of people say these days, well, that's my truth.
Sure.
Versus your truth. Is there such a thing as a personal truth? In other words, meaning the facts, let's just say, as I understand them through my personal belief system and experiences. We'll call that a subjective truth or a personal truth. Is that a real thing?
I think it is, as long as you use the modifier personal.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Right. So if someone is, well, we're about to bring up another word here, I believe, which is honest.
Sure.
Which we'll have to unpack that word. But if someone is honest about their truth, is that sufficient for trust? As opposed to being in alignment or integrity with some idea of universal truth, which I don't know. It's not clear to me that that is knowable by anyone except God, perhaps.
Sure. Could we rephrase that question one more time?
Okay, so let's dial back to trust is, and again, I'm not necessarily agreeing with this. I'm just exploring
no,
it with
no, no.
you. But But what you told me is that trust is having faith in another person's,
that another person's from an external source
being true. Or yeah, yes, right. That it's having faith in the truth that you're receiving from outside of yourself. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, if everybody has their own personal truth, if someone is representing that to you in good faith meaning honestly, without deception, without ulterior motives.
No malicious intent.
Without malicious intent. Is that sufficient for trust? That's my question.
I think this is where the old adage, communication is key, comes into play. Because we have to be aligned on meaning. Because what's true for me may not be true for you. That's why it's personal truth as opposed to universal or absolute truth. And so for anything I say to you about my personal truth to be accepted as your personal truth and your inner dialogue, your personal programming, personal dream, you have to understand the words that I'm conveying in that moment, and we have to have agreement on what the meaning of what is being said is.
I like that phrasing. The word understand is a little charged for me for reasons that we could have a lot of fun exploring probably. But yeah, I like what you just said there. Yeah, in order for us to have communication, productive communication, let's say, it's important for us to have agreement on the meaning of the words.
Correct.
That we're using.
Correct.
And what does that have to do with my question about personal truth as it pertains to trust?
So personal truth, maybe this comes back to the word faith. It's the belief system.
The word faith seems to be particularly important to this concept, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Because it ties into one's belief system, and we're not all programmed the same, so different words can mean different things to us. They may represent different things to us based on our personal experience, personal traumas, life path.
Yeah.
And even goals. You know, maybe it's stuff that hasn't happened, but stuff that we are striving for. There might be a altered perception.
Sure. But is it fair to say that our perception is shaped by all of those things you just mentioned?
Absolutely.
Our experiences, our belief system, our intentions,
100%.
Our desires.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm curious if we're using the word faith. Well, my sense is that we have at least used the word faith in two different ways, and I'm curious about that. You've been using the word faith in the sense of to have faith, and I've used it as part of the phrase to be in good faith. And for me, trust is deeply connected to this idea of good faith or being in good faith, as, you know, I kind of briefly defined it earlier. So I think that's interesting because for you, it sounds like faith, as it's connected to trust, has a lot to do with belief. And I guess it does for me too, but it's like, what are we believing in? For me, I'm believing in essentially your intentions. I'm believing in that your intentions are pure in the sense of not wanting to do me harm, being earnest, being sincere in communication with me, in honesty with me, and so forth.
And I would almost tie it to integrity, I think.
Well, okay, but when you're saying to have faith in someone else's truth or have faith in the truth of what you're receiving from somewhere, someone or somewhere else, Is that the same? Are we talking about the same thing? Or are you talking about something different?
Yeah, I think we're talking about the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's based on belief. I think that's...
But belief in the accuracy or belief in the intention? I think that's the distinction I'm noticing here.
Belief in the accuracy.
That's what I thought. So for you, you can have trust if you truly believe that whatever it is you're receiving is accurate, aka true.
Correct.
And for me, I can have trust if I believe that you're sincere, even if your information may be different than the information coming from another source or the information as I understand it or from my perspective.
So maybe we are in fact talking about the same thing, because I would say the accuracy is based on my interpretation, my perception of the person or thing that I am receiving that information from, and my understanding of their knowledge and their perspective.
Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, so you said it was based on more of the intention of the other person.
For me.
For you, right. Yep. I think intention is certainly part of it. And so if faith for me, or faith-based truth.
Now there's a phrase.
For me, it is about the accuracy of the information, but it has a lot to do with my understanding of the communicator's background and what their existence is. You know,
yeah.
where are they coming from?
Is that another way of saying empathy?
I don't know that it's empathy per se. But it does have to do with having some knowledge of the communicator. Yes.
Okay. This is interesting for me. So it would follow for me, correct me if I'm wrong, it would follow from that for you, it would take time to build trust with someone, because when you very, very first encounter a person, you don't know anything about their background, their experience, their perspective, their belief system. So you couldn't possibly have trust because you couldn't at that until you've come to understand them, then you couldn't have a belief system about the accuracy of their truth or their information. Is that right?
I think in a very personal, like an intimate setting, absolutely. But more on the nose in current society, just thinking about sales.
Okay.
You know, and so going to that intention without knowing the accuracy, or without being able to know the accuracy of the information being conveyed, because of lack of knowledge of the communicator, intention can absolutely come into play and act as a guideline until more information is known about that communicator.
Interesting. Who or what do you trust in your life right now?
I generally trust the people closest to me. That's why I keep them close to me, or allow them to get close to me. My kids, my ex-wife, my girlfriend, you. I'd say everybody in the inner sanctum, I have a lot of faith and trust in.
What's the difference between faith and trust?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a really good question, my friend. We know, or we've arrived, I believe, at the mutual understanding that faith is belief-based. Trust is the ability to accept I was going to say communication, but I feel like trust is much broader than just communication.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, there's an amount of reliability from one person to another in trust.
Are there different kinds of trust? Maybe this is one of those concepts that, like love, for sure. example, you start trying to answer the question, what is love? And you discover that it's a whole lot of different things packaged into one word, which in many ways doesn't really make sense, I think, in our language.
Correct.
Maybe trust is the same. Because don't we use, isn't it true that we use the word trust to mean at least more than one, if not several, fundamentally different concepts?
Sure. Taking the banking definition out of it, like setting up a trust, which is a whole different use.
But even that's interesting that that's the word for that thing.
That's true.
You know, and I think there's some root that ties back to.
No question.
That makes sense. But anyway, yeah, but how about we even dial one notch further back and say, like, what are the different types of trust?
Is it different types of trust, or is it different levels of trust?
How about
and layers of trust based on one's mastery of certain skills?
I don't know. But the thought that I have would be just to start with what are the different ways that we might use that word? For example, I trust what you're saying to me right now. Or I trust that you'll be there for me if I need support.
Sure.
Or I trust this source of information. I trust the reliability of this equipment. Are these all actually the same thing, or are we actually using the word to mean different, fundamentally different things? That's what I'm not clear on.
I mean, we use the word a lot in different ways, for sure. Like you can have a trusting individual.
Yeah.
Who to me is one that is more likely to have faith in the external inputs around them.
Okay, and let me rephrase that in my own language. I agree with you, and the way I would say it is a trusting individual is someone who is more likely to believe
sure.
in the good faith of others.
Yes, absolutely.
Although we both use the word faith. I just noticed. Yeah.
That's funny.
Interesting.
So in all of the examples that you just gave, I do hear the faith or belief in the integrity of what that external source is.
Belief in the integrity of feels like a phrase that could be inserted into almost every one of those different examples.
Correct.
That's interesting. Belief in the integrity of. Of course, we push the problem one back level to what does the word integrity mean? But okay, I think we're getting somewhere. And I'm noticing right now that, well, I'm curious right now if there is some sort of a kind of a positive negative polarity to trust, or sort of an optimism pessimism, glass half full, glass half empty. In other words, what I'm saying is it true that for some people or in some situations that trust has to be built, meaning we start from a zero or a negative trust and then only acquire trust? I know I'm using the word acquire in a loose way right now, through life experience, versus are there some people or sometimes situations when we start out with an implicit trust And then only that trust only erodes or is removed through lived experience. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
It does. But it's taking me back to my comment about levels or layers of trust. Since I now have trusts and banking on the mind, I would inherently trust my banker, if I had money, to manage said money based on what I know of his personal background, the thought that wherever he or she is working has done a background check and has trained this person properly, it would take more time and knowledge before I let my banker watch my kids, which is a very different sort of more intimate trust to me.
Interesting. Is that a level or is that just a context?
An expansion of...
But also, would you trust your kids with your money? You see what I mean?
Sure.
Is it less of... I mean, I'm sure there are some levels that seems... I think it seems to me that most people would agree with that, but also it's different domains.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of trust. I trust you in this situation, but not in this situation per se. Or also, I may trust you in both of these situations, but at different levels.
Sure. I come back to the word mastery. Mm-hmm. And again, knowledge of, I expect that a banker has mastered the art of handling money, investing money, even down to just using the systems when you make a deposit to make sure that it gets into your account.
So I feel like you're proving my point. My point being that there are different, if not types, then maybe we could call them categories of trust. I'm noticing in our conversation as we're exploring this, there's at least like four different things that are coming up for me, or maybe it's not four. Maybe there's two of them that are really the same or one includes the other. But what I'm coming up with is intentions. That is good faith. I trust in your good faith, which is to say your intentions are pure, are not malicious, are in integrity. I trust your competence, your mastery, your skill set, which is contextual. I guess all of these things are contextual, and there can be levels to each one of them, but they're different, right? I may think you intend to do a good job, but I don't trust that you will do a good job,
sure,
per se, if I don't trust your confidence, competence.
Yeah, I think they can each be isolated.
And then there's reliability, which is different. I may believe in your sincerity. I may believe that you have the ability to accomplish whatever it is, but that you may not actually follow through with it. And also that reliability extends to non-personal. I trust the reliability or integrity of a table to support my coffee cup or lamp or the chair to be reliable.
Support you.
Yeah. I guess the fourth one that's coming up for me, or excuse me, that was only two, right? We got intentions. No, that's three. Intentions, competence, reliability, and then honesty is coming up for me as a fourth category. Is that a different thing than good faith, do you think? Can I trust that you have good intentions, but not that you will be honest with me? Or is that inclusive, like, to be non-deceptive is a requirement of good faith, in your opinion?
I feel like that would be a requirement of good faith.
Okay, so maybe we've got three things. We've got essentially intentions, competence, and reliability. These are three different types of trust?
I'll go with that. I think, yeah, they certainly all play into the specific definition.
Can we summarize trust by saying trust is actually to take something on faith?
I believe absolutely you can.
Where faith is essentially, when we say faith, what we mean is to believe in something.
Well, no, it's, yeah, it's the ability to believe in one's ability, to believe in one's communication, to believe in one's integrity.
Right.
Yeah, I think broadly that's...
Without, that's a, there's some piece of this that has to do with, when we talk about faith, it seems to have something to do with not verifying or not requiring evidence. Is that right? Like, to say I have faith means I take it as given.
Sure.
I take it as given that you are sincere. I take it as given that you are reliable, that you will follow through, or that you have the skill set to accomplish whatever.
To some degree, I would say that trust is, at least in part, in the present moment, being able to rely on some future occurrence.
Predictability.
Predictability.
Interesting. Yeah.
And since it's in the future, absolutely, there's unverifiable actions that you are counting on occurring.
We're learning a lot today.
Yeah, this is such a mastery of technical skills. I will definitely trust that after today, we know how to use this equipment more competently and reliably.
This is Johnny's first podcast. Hilarious. Every single thing you can imagine. This is great, though. Okay, I think we're getting somewhere. I feel like we're getting somewhere important and helpful. Okay, so to trust means to have faith in the future, to believe that you can
outcome.
Yeah. Correct, to believe in a prediction of a future outcome, whatever that outcome may be, whether that outcome is that you will treat me well, that you will tell me the truth as you understand it, that you will.
Is it dangerous to replace prediction with the expectation of a future outcome? An expectation that communication is going to be accurate and reliable?
I think those two words certainly mean different things, but I'm not sure that there's a important distinction.
Okay.
In our conversation.
Okay. But yeah, I respect that.
Yeah. I think the essence of what we're getting at doesn't rely on that word prediction or expectation, but it does. It seems to me that there is an essence that we've uncovered here, which has to do with prediction or expectation. Yeah. I can't come up with a third word that encapsulates them both. But in general, it seems like what we're getting at is confidence. That brings up another phrase, which is full faith and confidence.
Okay.
Which I think we use sometimes as a stand-in for the simpler word trust, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I think that's interesting. Those two words put together, I have faith and confidence.
And yeah, something or someone, absolutely.
It does have to do with your expectations of the future. I mean, that's why it's important. That's why trust is important, because it has to do with your expectations of the future.
Well, and bringing it around to, if I can insert truth back into it.
I knew you would.
there's your question about personal truth versus universal truth. Expectation implies to me a greater deal of subjectivity.
Versus what? Prediction?
Maybe than prediction.
How so?
Expectation seems more personal. And I would say that trust is also a very personal issue, and so I kind of like the tie there. Mm. Prediction almost makes it sound like statistics and probability.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Like it's something that could be measured.
Yes.
Or validated, more like an expectation is more in the eye of the beholder in terms of whether you're satisfied, whether your expectations are satisfied or not, versus I predict that it will rain at 3 o'clock today, and it either does or it doesn't.
Sure.
Okay. Well, do you feel like we've got a handle on the basic question of what trust is to enough to move forward with how do we acquire it?
I feel like we're in pretty good agreement on what trust looks like as a definition.
Thank you for that. There's something else that I've been noticing as we've been having this conversation, which is that maybe there's like a positive and a negative polarity to trust, or
how do you mean?
Like an optimism pessimism binary, or like a glass half full, glass half empty kind of situation, where in some situations do we start out with like a zero or negative trust with someone or something, and then have to build up to an actual sense of any level of trust, versus in other situations, do we start with an implicit trust, and it's only through experience,
based on experience, it might get whittled away a little bit.
That trust might be eroded or subtracted or removed in some way. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. I would say it's going to be largely situational. What comes to mind is like a used car salesman. They're always the socially accepted viewpoint is they're going to tell you anything they want to move a car off the lot. And to some degree, it takes conversation and time and feeling a person out, if you don't know anything about cars, to be able to determine the reliability of an automobile independently. You're going to be looking for some sort of trust factor before you drive off the lot in that vehicle. And so there, I would say, just, you know, because of the way used car salesmen are referenced in pop culture, even, and in society, there you're starting at square zero and looking.
Or even negative.
Absolutely. Yeah, you almost walk into that situation with a negative trust factor.
Yeah. And that's because of the belief system.
Absolutely.
That we're taught, essentially.
Yeah, 100%.
What about for you when you meet someone new, not in a specific context like a used car salesman, where, or in any other situation where there's some sort of societal meme that gives you an automatic calibration around trust, but just any new random person that you meet for the first time, where are you on the trust spectrum? Do you implicitly trust people until they give you a reason not to trust them? Or do you implicitly distrust people until you've built up enough lived experience with them to have that level of understanding? Or do you start at a zero point?
I would say that I'm kind of on the optimistic side of that scale, and I implicitly give everyone at least some certain level of trust, and maybe it's just in a cursory way, but until they prove otherwise, I like to think that people intend to do what they say.
So you trust people's intentions implicitly. You trust a person you meet randomly, you know nothing else about them, no reputation, you know, no recommendation, nothing at all. You assume their good faith.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe this comes back into the levels conversation a little bit, because yes, I would trust their intentions and that they intend to follow through on their word, that they are a trustworthy person. However, in the same breath, I'm realizing that if they say something totally outlandish, I'm not just going to buy into it. I'm going to pull out my phone and start to Google, you know? Yeah, there's a varied level of trust based on that interaction.
And how much experience you have with them.
Yes, correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought we were using the new person on the street, somebody that I don't know. Yeah,
absolutely. No, we are. Yeah, I'm just filling in.
Sure. Yeah.
Context. And what about their reliability? If you meet someone fresh, brand new, what's your opinion, or what's your assumption about their reliability?
I think it would err more on the side of intention that, you know, if they're telling me they're going to do something, that they are reliable to do so.
You assume reliability until proven otherwise.
Correct.
And then same thing with competence?
Competence, yes. I tend to assume that, yeah, people know their own skill set and know what they can and cannot do. And and maybe this is just the way that I live my own life, but if I tell somebody I'm going to try and do something that I don't have a skill set in, I will generally give a disclaimer and say, look, I'm going to do my best.
Mm-hmm.
And I would expect that they trust that, especially knowing that I'm essentially telling them I don't know how competent I am at getting this done.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect similar courtesy from most people that I meet.
Mm-hmm. But do you assume a certain level of general competence from everyone?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I mean, just like I assume in communication that most of our communication is going to go, you know, smooth and steady, that we have bought into the same vocabulary or have the same understanding of words.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So yeah, there's a general trust and competency, like in people's ability to communicate.
Is that trust situational? So suppose that you're walking down a dark alley at night and a couple of potentially fine but rough looking gentlemen,
threatening,
I don't know about threatening, but okay. Just, you know, some just interesting looking characters of some sort, you know, step out from behind a doorway in the middle of the dark alley. What's your automatic trust level in that situation with new people you've just met?
It's probably going to vary.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the cues or signals that you pick up from people or the environment that tell you or your intuition whether or not someone is trustworthy?
You know, I mean, I guess in that particular situation, it would be a number of different variables. The environment that this encounter occurs in, based on what sort of trust I may or may not be putting in them, their ability to take care of themselves. You know, if there's a certain clear level of self-respect, I'm probably going to have a little bit more reliance on what they might say, including, you know, whether or not they're hanging out in dark alleys at night. That's certainly more environmental, and it tells me something about the choices they make in their own life. And if I find that, if to me somebody comes off as making questionable choices in their own life, it's certainly going to decrease the amount of trust that I inherently put in them.
Mm. But you're reading a lot into a very little bit of information there.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because, you know, somebody's happens to be in the same dark alley as you, at the same time of night, dressed in a particular way or looking any particular way. You don't really know their story of how they got there.
This is absolutely
in
true.
That state. Frankly, you're there too.
Yeah.
Looking however it is you look.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think of how we, and I'm not challenging you on this because I think we all do this and I'm sure I do this. Just, it's interesting to think about how much information we add or populate into a very thin,
sure,
set of sense data to decide what level of trust we have in any particular situation or person, given those environmental cues.
Well, and this comes back to one's personal background and the narrative that they build for themselves in their head. I don't hang out in a lot of dark alleys, but I do have certain preconceptions about people who do, I guess. And so based on my background, my instant trust factor is probably going to be lower than maybe somebody who spends a lot of time in dark alleys and knows people that do the same.
Yeah, fair enough. For me, I feel that I do pick up a lot of cues that my brain notices. and feeds, you know, feeds to me as intuitions or signals, somatic, you know, feelings in my body, senses, sure. just thoughts that pop into my head,
pattern
yeah. recognition. I guess we call all of that intuition. Yeah. Especially for me, facial expressions mm-hmm. mean a lot for me. I notice when people are talking to me and the kind of certain facial expressions that they make when they're saying certain things that for some reason signal to me deception.
Yeah, I understand that. What is it they say that verbal communication is really only like 15% of the message?
Mm.
And you know the other 85% of a message gets lost if you're communicating by phone or by text, because you can't hear intonation in a voice, you can't see the micro expressions on somebody's face.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an important factor.
Mm-hmm. That tells me a lot about how much I trust people, or rather, those signals. I use those signals a lot to decide how much to trust people. And sometimes I think they're false positives.
Sure.
But in general, my belief is that those signals, those intuitions have served me very, very well in my life in terms of not falling victim to scams or getting taken advantage of or serving as early warnings to a relationship that's, you know, not healthy.
Sure.
In some way.
Absolutely. But again, that's all going to be subjective, you know, based on your personal life experiences versus somebody else's who might be in that same situation. And maybe they are not as clued in to micro expressions, or they haven't been in a bad situation before.
Okay. So we've kind of touched on both sides of this a little bit. You know, you brought up the example of the car salesman example, and not to be derogatory to car salesmen in general, but there is, of course, you know, kind of a meme around salespeople in general that maybe you can assume something about their intentions. That, not to say that they're acting in bad faith per se, but that they're certainly acting in a way that is not always to your benefit. And so that affects your automatic trust. And then we've also explored a little bit about you in particular and your sense of sort of having an automatic trust or assumption of trust in people when you first meet them, environment and circumstances and situations having an impact on that. But that in general, you assume people's good faith, you assume their competence, you assume their reliability until given reason to doubt that. But I'm curious, well, how do you build trust with someone? So we've talked about there being levels of trust, right? So when you meet someone for the first time, you may trust them to a certain point.
Absolutely.
You may trust that, okay, whatever this person's telling me right now, I don't automatically suspect that it might not be honest, or I don't automatically suspect that they might be out to harm me or something like that. I have trust in this person up to that level. But you wouldn't necessarily immediately put your child in their care.
Sure.
Or your money, for that matter.
Yeah.
So there's like levels to this. So how do you build trust with someone?
I think there's a function of time. Since we previously talked about trust being about future occurrences, I think there's a function of time and past proof of reliability, accountability,
what is that
and
proof?
Integrity.
What does that proof look like? People saying they'll do something and then following through with that?
Yeah, exactly.
So you sort of build up a repository of experiences that validate or demonstrate whatever that is. Reliability, for example.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it gets done.
How do you build up a trust in someone's faith?
A trust in someone's faith.
By which I mean their good intentions, their sincerity, their good faith.
I think there's a level of knowledge about a person that comes into play there. Again, you know, if past trusting situations have come out favorably, then I think there's definitely an impetus to build on that trust and add to the level of trust.
What's a trusting situation?
I mean, any situation where somebody tells you they're going to do something and or gives you information that proves to be accurate or reliable would be a trusting situation.
Okay, I thought you were going to say something about vulnerability. Like when you put yourself into a vulnerable
circumstance.
Yeah, relationship.
And they don't take advantage of that circumstance.
Yeah, or provide support.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think what I'm noticing is that the two examples you gave seem to be about reliability and honesty. I trust that this, or I have experienced situations where this person has followed through on what they said they were going to do. I have experienced situations where this person's information that they gave me was accurate. And then I'm pivoting to intentions, which of course is what is more important to me.
That's been a focus.
Yeah. It's very interesting how we're just noticing our kind of preferences or biases
around the word.
In what's important, like the sense of importance, the levels of importance for each of us around these different areas. So to me, that's what proves trust, or that's a big, important way that people prove trust, is by how they act in positions of power.
Sure.
Or opportunity.
Yeah, I can see that. Let me ask you this. Would you show vulnerability to somebody that you didn't trust?
I generally would not.
Yeah.
Although, no, I suppose I've just done that, actually, in what happened today. I suppose I would. I suppose I do sometimes show vulnerability as a way of actually creating trust.
I can see that. Absolutely.
You know, just to recap what we were talking about a moment ago, you know, I was in a situation, I am in a situation of vulnerability, actually, in this moment with a service provider, someone who I hired to do a job for me. And the job did not work out well. And yet, according to the terms and conditions of, you know, the way that this person was hired, they could bill me for a lot of time spent, although the job was not completed. In fact, the job is a train wreck, ultimately. And, you know, there's different ways that I could approach that. Because, you know, this is a person that I don't know, that I just met. We're interacting through a job site. And, you know, I could demand to not have to pay for anything. There's all sorts of remedies that perhaps I could pursue, but instead what I chose to do was to put my trust in this person's good faith and said, you know, I trust you to look into your heart and bill me what you really think is fair for what's happened here today. And that is a position of vulnerability, and that is an example of me choosing to trust in that position, putting myself into a position of vulnerability with someone that I actually have no reason to trust through experience, right?
So I do like this concept of vulnerability. Perhaps arguably to build trust, you have to test a relationship with someone or something by opening up a small window of vulnerability to see how they or this item responds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And meeting your requirements in that open, vulnerable space inherently increases the level of trust.
Right. It's like I have a donut and I really like my delicious donut, and I'm just going to put this donut here on the table between the two of us. And now I'm going to step out of the room for a moment. and see if your donut is still there when you get back. Not that people do this, maybe they do, but I not that necessarily there would be any sort of like that people's testing of each other's trust is that calculated. But I think that is what we do in an intuitive way or in a subconscious way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, arguably any transactional situation, especially with a service provider, you know, you are to some degree opening up your vulnerability. You're letting this person come into your home or office space or wherever to provide a service. And as a new service provider, they are untested. And so you have a certain amount of faith or belief that they are going to be able to get the job done with some competence. Mm-hmm. And if that job is not completed in the desired manner, your faith going forward, your trust in that provider is decreased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really keeps coming back to trust is a belief or a level of confidence in the predictability of an outcome in a way. That almost feels like the root of all of these different kinds of trust anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Are there certain kinds of trust that are harder to repair than others?
Harder to prepare.
Sorry, I said repair.
Oh, repair. Yes, almost certainly. I think it would probably depend on the relative level of intimacy that you have with a person or thing and how vulnerable you have been with them in the past. And if there's repair necessary, then it can be assumed that they have done something to break trust in the past. And so that vulnerability gets kind of reset to a lower level until such time as it can be proven that this person is trustworthy again by not taking advantage or doing something that breaks that expectation or predictability.
Seems like there could be a catch-22 at some point where if you've lost enough trust that you don't feel safe,
absolutely,
to be vulnerable, then there's no opportunity for a person to create a life experience that demonstrates trustworthiness in that area.
I think it would depend on the circumstances, but yes, absolutely. And again, that's going to be subjective to both people in that situation and their own personal history, their own expectations of a situation, traumas that they've experienced in the past, whatever those look like.
It seems to me that at some level, trust becomes a choice. It's a choice that you make. You've got whatever life experience, you've got whatever cultural programming or memes,
yeah,
stories,
for sure,
the teaching of your parents, mentors, or wherever you've learned lessons from outside of your own experience. But then all of that information collectively informs your belief system about your level of confidence or assuredness or expectation of what level of trust is warranted. But then in the context of that information, you still have to decide.
Yeah, that's true.
Will I trust right now? How much?
So a word that's coming up for me as you say that is awareness. And maybe it goes back to conscious thought versus, you know, going with your gut or your intuition. And I think in the active conscious mind, yes, choice is available, but it requires some level of awareness that that choice can be made.
Well, I would argue that a choice is going to be made whether you're aware of it or not.
Sure.
Something's making a choice.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I like that you brought up sense data as a part of that information landscape within the context within which that choice gets made.
Sure. Well, and some choices are very reactive. You know, like it's you without thinking through. I mean, everything is a choice all the time.
Or maybe reflexive.
Sure.
Reflexive.
Yeah. That's thank you. That's a better word.
So anyway, but the point I was kind of getting on there is that's really the only way out of the catch-22, it seems to me. If you're in a situation where, okay, let's say I have lived experience or whatever information, whatever the source of that information is, which could be intuitive, which could be subliminal, could be somatic, or, you know, logical. I have some reason not to trust. I have good reason not to trust. But I want to build trust again. So at some point, I've got to flip that switch manually to the on position, so to speak, right? And say, okay, I will choose to trust you.
It is a choice to open up more vulnerability, to give the opportunity to build trust.
Trust is inherently a state of vulnerability, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Just going to the expectations. Yeah, you open up vulnerability with the expectations of something or someone behaving a certain way. And if it doesn't happen, then you feel slighted. You lose trust in that situation. But yeah, absolutely.
You're going to be harmed in some way.
Sure.
If your trust is broken.
Yeah.
So it really is something you can do consciously, it seems to me.
I would think so. Yeah, I believe so.
You can choose, you know, you can have a conscious intention. You can have a relationship, you can have a conversation, and then you can create a scenario within which trust can be built with someone or something.
Yes.
Or not.
If you have that awareness and choose to do so, correct?
For me, I know that there's one type of trust that is very hard for me to repair and rebuild. And that has to do with honesty. I don't know why, but it seems to me that there's something different in character about that. I don't know why,
mm-hmm.
but like reliability. You know, I've had 10 experiences with you, and in 6 of them, you've followed through, and in 4 of them, you've dropped the ball.
Sure.
In some way. But for some reason, it's like, okay, you dropped the ball a couple of times, but I'll give you another. I trust you to try again and try harder and do better or whatever.
Sure. I think something like competence is easy to overcome because that can be learned.
And that can be demonstrated.
And it can be demonstrated. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like, hey, look, I didn't have that skill set previously, but look, here's my certification or here's my list of references or.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you're right. It's more demonstrable for sure. Versus something like honesty is a little bit more character related as to morals and ethics. And that's more the view of a core human, what is in their heart versus what is in their head and what can they do with their hands. And so it is. I think it requires, more intention in opening yourself up to vulnerability when something like that has been broken, when trust has been broken based on honesty.
Mm-hmm. It's also, there's something, it's almost a trap in itself, because if someone has been dishonest and either that dishonesty has been discovered or they've acknowledged it or admitted to it and then recommits to honesty, there's like a trap there, right? Because all you have to go on is that person's word.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I promise, I'm not lying anymore. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that now, is it's a pretty serious catch 22.
Where do we go from here? It's a tough one. It's a tough one. But gosh, I mean, is there anyone who hasn't been dishonest in some way in their life? I mean, what I'm trying to say is it seems like this experience is universal. Everyone's been on both sides of this.
No question.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I would say arguably at some point in their lives, always.
So it's like you got to have some level of empathy. If someone's if someone's looking you in the eye and saying like, no, I acknowledge that I have been dishonest in the past and I am not now. You have to have some empathy because the shoe's on the other foot.
I mean, arguably, you don't have to. Nobody has to do anything, right? You're right. It's always a subjective issue. And if you make the choice to rebuild trust with somebody, then yes, having a level of empathy to understand the circumstances around which trust was broken would certainly be a big first step in doing that. And maybe that's the first sign of vulnerability, is just having that empathy and being willing to consider somebody else's circumstances, even though they conflict with your own life experiences to date.
I'm not saying that if somebody's lied to you and then tells you that they're not lying now, that you have to believe them. I'm not saying that at all.
Sure.
I'm just saying that given that I feel my sense is that to some degree, this is an experience that we all share of having at some point engaged in deception and perhaps having a change of heart and wanting to recommit to honesty. Or at least knowing that you're telling the truth as you understand it in some specific situation that you want to be believed. Like everyone has that. I think everyone shares that sense to some degree of like,
agreed.
No, I am actually telling the truth and I want to be believed. That's what I mean by, well, what I'm saying is if we were to take as a universal, like categorical imperative that if someone's ever been dishonest, that I can never trust their word again. Everything would fall apart.
Yeah.
Right?
That'd be a pretty negative society.
We got a problem.
Right.
As a society, if we did that. So you have, like, there has to be a way to repair.
Yeah.
Trust
absolutely.
And honesty. There has to be.
Yes. Agreed.
And I don't know what that is other than you choose to do it. And at a certain point, if, you know, everyone's going to have their own threshold for how many times.
There,
do we go around this merry-go-round before 100%. It's like game over?
Absolutely. No question. Forgiveness is coming to mind, like the ability to let go of past offenses. Again, circumstantial. Some are harder to forgive than others. But I think forgiveness, and maybe that comes with the empathy, the ability to recognize that someone is capable of change and growth. And as you see other evidences in a person's life of calculated change, intentional change, I think I should say, and growth as a result, the ability to forgive and be more empathic seems like it would be a natural occurrence.
I love everything you just said. And I'm glad that you brought up forgiveness because I think there's something key in that concept as it pertains to repair and rebuild of trust. Because I think it's not perfect, but I think there's at least a tool in the toolbox, which is apology. I think apology is a partial way that we can begin a process of repairing trust.
And maybe not even just apology by itself, depending on what the occurrence was that broke trust, but one's willingness to accept accountability or responsibility with that. It's very easy to say, I'm sorry, and apologize. It's very different to own one's behavior in a circumstance and apologize for it and commit to doing better in the future.
Agreed. And this, for me, this brings up something, a system that I encountered a little while ago, which is, have you ever heard of the 5 apology languages?
Oh, I have not. No, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the 5 love languages, but this sounds quite different.
Exactly, yeah. Right, it's in the same paradigm as the 5 love languages, but what I learned, and I won't be able to quote them all perfectly in this moment, but I'll do my best to just give a sketch. But the idea is that there's actually many different ways in which we make apology. We can make apology. Mm. And much like the love languages, we may have preferences for what makes sense to us in ways that we offer apology, and then also what's actually meaningful to us in the ways that we receive them.
Okay.
And so saying the actual words, I apologize for XYZ, or I am sorry for XYZ, is just one of the languages, the actual verbal language itself, which can be meaningful to people. Like, you can imagine other forms of apology, but never actually saying, like, how many times have we either said or heard, like, well, you did a whole lot of cool stuff, but you never said you're sorry for X. Sure. I've been waiting to hear those words, right? So that's meaningful to people to actually hear the words. But then also taking accountability, just like you said, which is a different thing. You can say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I dropped that thing on your foot, but that's different than saying, you know, I accept responsibility for, or I take ownership for carrying that thing in a way that was irresponsible. And led to your injury.
Okay.
And that's more meaningful to some people, or that's important to some people as a part of an apology. Then there's also reparations. I dropped that thing on your foot. I may or may not have said, I'm sorry. I may or may not have taken ownership for it, but I did pay for your hospital bill, you know, or I, in some way, offered an actual remedy. And I can't remember the other two off the top of my head, but you get the idea.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's certainly different levels of apology.
What's super interesting to me about that, though, is much like the love languages, with that level of awareness to notice why or times when you make an apology and it doesn't seem to be effective. Mm-hmm. Or doesn't seem, it's not, the repair part is not happening, or the healing part is not happening. And it may be because for you, it's really important for someone to actually speak the words, sorry.
Yes.
For another person, it's like, hey, talk is cheap.
Sure.
How about my broken foot?
Yeah, exactly. So I know this conversation is not about apology, but bringing up the 5 apologies, I've always read that you can't follow a real apology with the word but. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. then you add some justification and it shows a lack of ownership. Mm. You know, like, I'm so sorry I did this, but you shouldn't have been doing that.
Right.
And, you know, and made this action happen. It has to be just, you know, the isolated incident, and I am sorry for my actions in that moment.
That's exactly why I replaced the word but with and.
You sly devil.
No, I think that's a great point. I'll bet that's part of the apology languages system somewhere.
No, that's interesting.
I haven't fully explored it. But I'm sure, and I'm sure that has something, you know, to do with whether or not an apology is fully received by someone. Because if you qualify an apology, I definitely think it's subtractive, if not nullifying. So if trust is broken, now it doesn't necessarily mean, if trust is broken, it doesn't actually necessarily mean that someone is guilty. Or owed an apology in the situation.
Sure.
Per se, right? I think.
I can't think of a specific example, but yes, I imagine that's true.
I think that two people in good faith could somehow break trust with each other.
Well, sure.
Okay. So yeah, it could be the case that, you know, hey, we've got a loss of trust here. I don't think you did anything wrong. I don't think I did anything wrong, but
sure,
nonetheless.
Sure, like your circumstance today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have every reason to believe that that service provider came here with, you know, the best intent, mm-hmm. but was not capable of doing the job and doesn't necessarily owe you an apology.
Right.
But... Tried to get away from that one, but I think it just works well. You showed a little bit more vulnerability and said, look, I'm out because of this situation and would appreciate your respect of that fact as you're calculating, you know, the bill.
Yeah, that's a great example. You're right. You know, because, yeah, I think a service provider came as prepared as they could be and not incompetent and did their best.
But it didn't work out to your expectations or
to anyone's expectations, let's say.
Or to your predicted outcome.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And yeah, there has been a loss of trust, regardless. There's no way around that.
Absolutely.
There has been a loss of trust, even though I don't request or, you know, expect an apology for it, because I don't think anyone did anything quote unquote wrong. No one is guilty.
Yeah, okay. That's a great example.
Exactly. But then there can also be those other cases where an apology could be helpful.
No question.
To rebuilding trust.
No question.
How far does that go, do you think?
How far does the apology go?
Yeah.
If it is a sincere apology, not followed by a but or a justification, I think it's going to depend on the person receiving the apology, how sincere they believe the apology is, and whether or not they have enough awareness to consciously decide whether or not they want to open up vulnerability to build trust again.
Oh, I just remembered a fourth apology language.
Yeah, hit me.
Which is...
Lord knows I could use them all in my life.
Which is, and this is how I'm going to take steps for that not to happen again in the future.
Okay, excellent. Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember. There's a more succinct way of saying that, but you get the idea.
Sure.
And that I thought of that in this moment because of what you were just saying, that I think is also can also be part of rebuilding trust, to have an expectation of change, right?
Yes. Well, it gets back to what we were saying earlier about somebody's ability to intentionally make those changes and show growth.
Yeah.
Which does take some time,
right?
Admittedly. But I feel like when somebody sets that intention and executes according to it, the signs are usually there pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like the commitment to following through on that intention,
right,
is quickly evident in many cases.
Yeah, so it seems like there's two different states or levels to that, which is one would just be expressing the intention to change, which could be sufficient for some people. And then the next level could be actually demonstrating change.
Yes.
In some way.
Absolutely. Yeah, good distinction.
Hmm. Well, what if we try to, there might be more to all of this, but what if we try to put these pieces together, what we have here right now, into what do you think is the maximally effective or maximally impactful or most likely to succeed version of how do we rebuild trust that's been lost?
I think the last point in the fourth apology, and if you think of the fifth, I'm dying to hear it because I'm sure I'm going to need that one in my life too.
I'm really hopeful it's going to pop in before the end of the day, but keep going.
But I think that fourth point that you made, the apology, and maybe it's not an even like a verbal apology as with your service provider, but certainly the intention to change, to remedy whatever the flaw is, whether it's character or physical or circumstantial, but the setting the intention to remedy that situation and then showing follow through on it is definitely going to be the one that gets my attention above others.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the service provider today, you know, if he called tomorrow with a solution and said, let me come and fix this situation, I feel like, tell me if I'm wrong, but when you need that service again in the future, because they've shown that integrity and in their, you know, moral and ethical compass and want to make the situation right, you would probably consider using them again.
Yeah.
And that trust would be maybe not 100%. Like, there would still be some question as to competency versus what your expectation is. But certainly if I were in that circumstance and a service provider called up to, even if they don't apologize, but just say, let's remedy this and did it right, I would definitely give them an opportunity at future work, just knowing that that is in their character.
Definitely, yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way. Something I've certainly learned in my various careers is you can make a lot of mistakes if you don't give up until you've made it right.
Yeah.
If you make it right in the end, that actually almost builds more trust in a way, I've noticed, than if it was just a slam dunk on the first try. You know, if it's a slam dunk on the first try, like, oh yeah, this person's great. They do good work. They do a good job. They're trustworthy. If you go through a bunch of trials and tribulations and even mistakes and errors and demonstrate your willingness to make things right, even at personal cost, that actually means more to a lot of people, I've found.
Absolutely.
Than if you just got it right on the first try.
Absolutely. Yeah. It shows so much more than just mere competence to get mm-hmm. a job done.
Yeah. Something about your character, as you say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's much deeper.
But as far as repairing or rebuilding trust is concerned, it sounds like to you, one of the things that's most important is setting an intention and also following through on demonstrating change.
Correct.
That's very meaningful for you in terms of rebuilding your expectation of whatever outcome that you want to put your trust in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a fair statement.
Mm-hmm. For me, the thing that was coming up was understanding.
Hmm. Well, we haven't revisited that word in a second.
For me, it's really important to understand what happened, in a way. The context, it is empathy.
I can see that.
Yeah.
You have empathy for somebody's particular circumstances.
Yeah, that's key. That's key for me.
Absolutely, I can see that.
And being able to rebuild trust. Because if I can have empathy for, and by empathy, I mean really being able to adopt or virtualize someone else's experience. That's what empathy means to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if in a situation where trust is lost or broken, if I can put myself in that person's place and deeply understand what was true for them as that was happening, then it almost feels like it couldn't have been any other way,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a certain respect. It's like, oh, well, you did what you did because you were where you were. You were thinking and feeling those things that you were based on your lived experience, et cetera. It's like, I probably would have done the same thing too in that situation under those conditions. And so it's more understandable, or it's more relatable. Actually, I think is better than understanding. It's more relatable. Or even if you don't agree, even if you might think to yourself, well, actually, even with all those same circumstances, I think I would have made different choices, been in integrity or been more honest or whatever. At least you can have compassion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's helpful for me. That's very helpful for me. And then following that up, I want some kind of believable intention that it won't be that way again in the future, or that somehow we're going to do things differently.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So compassion is not a word that has come into our conversation until just now. But I believe having compassion is certainly important to rebuilding trust. And I guess it's tied to empathy. It's, you know, the ability to perceive another person's situation and understand the influences and circumstances that build, you know, the narrative in their head and their personal character, and maybe even make the choice as to whether or not that is something you want in your life going forward, to be able to start rebuilding trust, or to keep somebody at arm's length and kind of write them off.
I think that empathy leads to compassion.
I'll go with that.
Well, this has been very interesting.
Yeah, what a great subject.
And we could go on for hours and hours and hours.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be a part two on this one.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot more to truth and trust. Hey, we haven't even really explored truth.
I know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good sequel. Is there anything else that's on your mind as it pertains to trust? Any other questions?
One thing that comes up in my very opening, when you asked me, you know, what does trust mean, and we were building this definition, I used the reference to external sources.
Yeah.
And having had the opportunity to think about this for a moment, I don't think they have to be external.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up.
Because we can definitely break trust with ourselves in lots of ways.
For sure. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up, because that would be a huge glaring hole in our entire conversation, which is self-trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have this conversation with people pretty regularly, actually, in the games that I play, which is, of course, when I say playing games, I'm referring to facilitations that when I'm consulting, coaching, counseling people. Self-trust, of course, is an obstacle for a lot of people, or something that people struggle with in a lot of different ways. And so I've actually done quite a bit of interesting exploration on that topic with a lot of people, but it's so rich. And yeah, we could certainly go deep down that rabbit hole. That might be the next sequel, actually, yeah, actually before we get to truth.
Yeah, I think that would be a good one, actually.
Yeah.
Self-trust would be a great topic.
Well, real quickly before we close, like what do you think is the difference between trusting yourself and trusting someone else or something else? Like, what's the fundamental distinction between internal trust and external trust?
I think this is definitely an awareness answer. I think for self-trust, one has to be aware of what their personal values are, like at their core, not on any sort of layer, just to bring some internal family systems into it, not a part that feels a certain way based on some trauma that the body or mind has experienced, but who one is at their core. And when you get to the core, it's much easier to build self-trust, because you really understand your own personal needs and desires and can act on them. And I think that when you are in tune with yourself, your capital S self, it becomes much easier to build trust with others, just knowing what your personal values are.
Explain capital S self.
So, the core of who you vision is, kind of the soul that you're born with before you have experienced any traumas out there in the world that shift your personal perspective on life, but at your very soul, like, what is important to you? What are your goals? What do you want to do with your life? How do you want to live your life without outside influence? And when you arrive at that knowledge, it is much easier to build self-trust because prior to arriving at that knowledge, self-trust is often based on who you think you are, based on the programming that you get, as you mentioned, from parents, from teachers, from religion, from society. But when you really know who you are at your core, when you arrive to your capital S self, then you can act from a place of integrity in your day-to-day life and build trust with yourself, knowing that you are being taken care of by your own body and mind. And that allows you then to come from a place of wholeness with when interacting with others and make better choices in the viewpoint that everything in life is a choice. Make the better choices that you're going to be taking care of yourself, and thereby limit situations where you need to be vulnerable in certain ways to build trust with others. I feel like that was a really long-winded answer, but I stand by it.
All right. Well, what's the lowercase s self?
The self that we perceive based on those outside influences, who our parents told us we needed to be, who our teachers, told us, what our teachers told us we should be doing.
So the lowercase.
All the shoulds.
Oh. So the lowercase s self is like the character
yes.
that gets created.
Yes.
As the book, the story of our life is written.
Based on the narrative that you write, that you are buying into in your own life.
The uppercase s self is like the witness that's reading that story.
Correct.
In a way. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, that's a much easier way to put it.
That's why there's two of us. Okay. Fascinating. I'm trying to decide what my answer to my question is. The question being, what's the distinction between internal trust and external trust? In a lot of ways, recently, I've been approaching it with the assumption that there is no distinction.
Okay.
I've been approaching it from a perspective of your relationship with yourself is just exactly like a relationship with anyone or anything else. That you can have agreements with yourself, you can have conversations with yourself, you can essentially treat yourself exactly as you treat anyone else. And it's an interesting model. It's an interesting frame. Because I don't think it is the way that most people think of their relationship with their self. But in that sense, that's where you can have in exactly the same way that we were talking about trust. You can break your own trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can then subsequently repair it or rebuild it through the different mechanisms and techniques that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Making an intention to change, taking ownership for, taking responsibility for whatever led to the loss of trust in the first place, demonstrating through experience, trustworthiness, and so forth. So anyway, obviously we opened a giant can of worms that we already set expectations to talk about some other time, but I just want to thank you very much for this conversation. This was super interesting and rich for me.
Could not agree more. Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to your house and for letting us sit down and have this conversation. I love these deep dives with you, my friend.
It's been a delight, first of many, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Amen. Likewise. Love you, brother. Thank you.
Love you too.
Thanks for joining me for this sacred conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And don't forget that the conversation can always continue. We can build on a topic that we've already talked about, and we can also start new topics and see how they all weave together. And that's just the exciting thing about this whole journey of exploration, is we don't know where it's going to go. But I'm really excited to find out with you. please don't be shy to reach out and schedule your sacred conversation on whatever topic is interesting to you. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking with you soon.